ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
This is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the program. After 8 years of ownership, is AAM Investment Group about to sell Lejeune Station out on the WA-NT border?
The original investment fund that Lejeune is held in is coming to an end here in the next couple of years. But we've also had some inquiries from parties that are wanting to undertake a development project on Lejeune and literally acquire it from the existing fund.
Yeah, that's AAM boss Gary Edwards. You'll hear from him in just a moment. Also this afternoon, a look at an economic impact report into buffel grass in the Northern Territory. What are the cost benefits of this grass as it continues to spread? The numbers in this report may surprise you. And of course, if there is a Dolly Parton song that you'd love to hear this afternoon, please do send through the request on 0487 99 1057.
Islands in the stream, that is what we are. No one in between, how can we be wrong? Sail away with me.
That number you need for a Dolly Parton song request, 0487 99 1057. This is the Country Hour. We're broadcasting right across the territory on the ABC. And g'day there if you've tuned in via the podcast.
I can't live without you if the love was gone.
That number, 0487 99 1057. I'll be taking you to Tamworth, actually, before 1:30, which, as you can imagine, the country music capital of this nation, is mourning and celebrating all things Dolly.
But that won't happen to us, and we got
AAM Investment Group says it's looking to attract new investment partners or potentially even just sell Lejeune Station near the WA-NT border. AAM took over this large property in 2018 and has invested heavily in Lejeune's cropping and cattle operations. The station is home to one of Australia's largest private dams, and the property is nearly 180,000 hectares in size. AAM Managing Director Gary Edwards says there's already a lot of interest coming in.
We're looking to run a process because we've had a number of interested parties that want to look at either a recapitalisation, so a new investment structure, because the original investment fund that Lejeune is held in is coming to an end here in the next couple of years. But we've also had some inquiries from parties that are wanting to undertake a development project on Lejeune and literally acquire it from the existing fund. So what we're doing is running an open process so that those seeking to acquire the asset can make bids to, and at the same time that anyone seeking to have a new investment structure, that can be put forward also.
Right. Are you able to share anything about those interested parties and what they might be looking to do?
Oh, look, the interested parties are looking to do a range of either extending the existing cattle operations through to undertaking rather significant developments to grow some further crops on Lejeune. Lejeune is very uniquely or has some very unique components in regards to its on-site water license, but also land that's suitable for farming development. And there's a lot of interest in doing that these days in the Northern Territory and the Kimberley region.
How do you explain that interest? What do you think is the reason for it?
Well, I guess, you know, there's a lot of development going on throughout Northern Australia and a lot of understanding that there's underutilised natural resources in the northern part of Australia. In Lejeune's case, you know, it holds a 50,000 megalitre water licence, and it's got, you know, an on-site dam storage that is filled by the monsoonal rains, and it's got a black soil floodplain that's highly suitable for more intensive agricultural uses.
What are some of the other key details and features of the property? How big is it, and what would the sale include?
Well, the sale, like any recapitalisation or sale event, will deal with the entirety of Lejeune, which is just under 179,000 hectares of grazing land. It's got a portion at the moment where there's four centre pivots being developed for cropping purposes for support of the existing cattle operation. You know, and it's in excess of 30-odd thousand head of cattle that are run on the property. But there's lots of opportunity to expand that through further investment and focus on how you better utilise those water resources.
So the crop production that's currently taking place at Lejeune, is that all for feeding cattle?
Yeah, that's to support the existing cattle enterprise. That what we've been able to do at Lejeune is get our first round weaners out inside the same year that they're branded, which is a pretty unique thing to do. And it actually reduces the grazing pressure on the operation and creates the opportunity that ultimately you can run more cattle on the pastoral lease, which is a pretty significant value these days, given that properties are significant and you want to move the cattle through to market weight as quickly as you can.
$100 million has been suggested as the sale price. Is that accurate or has that just come out of thin air?
Well, I guess we're open to see what the market, what value it puts on it. The reality is that there's been plenty of expressions of interest with those sort of numbers. We actually haven't put a value on it. There's been plenty of people asking about what the number is and, you know, whether it's $100 million or what it ultimately is, that we'll leave that for people to determine the value. You know, properties of this type don't come up very often. And again, that's why it's got the dual interest from new investment structures, but also bidders that want to secure it on their own right.
I understand aquaculture company Sea Farms had a lease agreement with AAM for its massive prawn farm project that never took off. Does the failure of that project have anything to do with AAM now wanting to explore options for Lejeune?
Well, I guess it's a timely point that we can now understand and I guess move forward with certainty in regards to what's occurring with that project. It's very, very unfortunate that the Sea Farms project hasn't gone ahead because it was a great concept and would have been an outstanding project had it been achieved. But certainly what it now does is provide clarity as to what we focus on in regards to further development that is not aligned to an aquaculture project. It's more aligned to more conventional farming and intensification on that. And it's utilising the resources and infrastructure that's there to achieve that. It'll be a pretty significant undertaking, but a great opportunity into the future.
So in the 8 years that AAM has owned Lejeune, how have you seen it change?
Well, there's been a lot of investment to date in improving the underlying infrastructure in regards to improving carrying capacity. As I said, we've put in the four centre pivot locations now. There's further approvals for further development at the moment that's currently approved, which is really aimed at growing crops for more production. You know, we're going to put down hopefully close to 6,000 tonnes of silage here in the next couple of months, which is, you know, a great example as to what you can achieve when you've got the ability to grow fodder and, you know, close proximity to the feeding yards. There's obviously been a lot of development, internal road infrastructure, and clearly there's a great sealed road that goes right to the front of Lejeune these days that deals with all of the historic limitations to do with wet weather access. You've got a, you know, significant ability to access the property right throughout the year. So there's been lots of changes in 8 years, and I suspect there'll be a lot more in the next 8 to 10.
How big of a piece is Lejeune in AAM's portfolio right now? And if it sells, what's next for AAM?
Oh, well, at the end of the day, this is obviously held in a specific investment trust. It's not connected with the rest of the AAM investments. It's a very critical part and it's a great asset now, asset portfolio, one that we'd like to keep. But at the end of the day, we've got to act in the interests here of investors and create these opportunities whereby if there are interested parties, when these fund terms come to an end, they get to explore that. And, you know, ultimately, if the highest bid we get is from someone to be a purchaser, well, that's what it will be. And AAM will focus on what we do in further investing in this sector, maybe in other areas of Australia. But, you know, this is an area and it's a region that's highly productive. AAM itself will continue to invest in the region, given the work that we're doing on the Sweetwater project, which is part of the old Ord Stage 3. So AAM won't be leaving in any way, shape or form, but we will be running this open and transparent process. To date, 100% of AAM's investment has all come from Australian investors. There is a lot of interest from both domestic investors, but obviously also offshore investors. So it'll be interesting to see whether, you know, the Australian investment market steps up to the plate here and matches what the foreign investors have been looking to do so far. And I think it's a great opportunity for, you know, large-scale Australian investment funds to get involved and be directly involved in investing in regional and rural Australia.
That is the Managing Director and Chief Executive of AAM, Gary Edwards, speaking to Jess Baker. So Lejeune Station, it has been listed for sale or investment via a joint marketing process through Lord and JLL. AAM is expected to make a final decision before the end of this year. The company still runs cattle on Merrifield and Limbunya stations in the Northern Territory, and of course is looking to develop the Sweetwater Irrigation Project near the WA border, better known as Ord Stage 3.
Hello, my name's Tyson. I work at the What I See Farms, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
It's 20 to 1. Making news today, Federal MP Luke Gosling will stand aside as Special Envoy for Defence, Veterans Affairs and Northern Australia as he faces charges of assault and breach of bail. The member for Solomon was yesterday charged with breaching his bail conditions less than a month after he was charged with two counts of assault over an alleged incident involving Northern Territory Administrator David Connolly. Mr. Gosling's bail conditions banned him from coming within 50 metres of NT Government House and required him to give Mr. Connolly's office 48 hours' notice before attending any event where both men would be present. If the two attend the same event, Mr. Gosling was required to stay 15 metres away from the administrator at all times. Mr. Gosling has categorically denied all allegations against him and said he would rigorously defend himself in court. In a statement that's been put out today, he said, due to the ongoing media attention and the distraction this is causing to the business of government, I have decided to temporarily stand aside as Special Envoy for Defence, Veterans Affairs and Northern Australia until these matters have been heard. An absolute icon of country music, Dolly Parton. She has died at the age of 80. Her nephew, Brian Seaver, spoke on behalf of the family earlier on today. Here is some of that statement.
I first went on the road with Dolly as a kid, getting a taste of the road life in the early 1980s. Dolly opened doors not just for me, but for her entire family to reach the potential we didn't even know was possible. Dolly also opened doors for generations of singers, songwriters, musicians, and dreamers from every walk of life and across every continent. By her example, we believed that anything was possible. She never saw a door she couldn't open, and the doors she opened made and changed history. My family and I have shared a lifetime of beautiful memories with Dolly, but so have you. She has always been on your television, your record player, your CD, and on your phone playlist, becoming an extended part of your family whether you liked it or not. Our family and the team she has entrusted with her legacy will work diligently to ensure her spirit will live with us forever. Dolly was a farmer, just like her daddy. He farmed the soil, she farmed songs and happiness. Dolly called me and said she wants to rest in a beautiful bed of plush cotton because after a life wearing heavy rhinestones, she finally deserves to be comfortable and have some rest. Rest in peace, Aunt Dolly, Aunt Granny, Gigi. May God bless Dolly Parton, and may God bless you all. She will always love you.
That is Brian Seaver, nephew of Dolly Parton, sharing a message from her family. That line of his, Dolly was a farmer just like her daddy. He farmed the soil, she farmed songs and happiness. When I heard that this morning, I got the tingles. I got the absolute tingles. Is there a Dolly Parton song that you would love to hear this afternoon? Send it through on 0487991057. Paul in Mille Lacs says he's saddened by the passing of Dolly Parton. Matt, could you please play Islands in the Stream? It was written by the Bee Gees back in the day. Well, that's the song I used to start the program today, Paul.
Islands in the stream, that is what we are. No one in between. How can we be wrong?
And another request here from Matt in Palmerston, who would love this afternoon to hear the Dolly track, Here You Come Again. So let's have a listen to that. And then up next, let's talk about data centres. The NT government, super keen for data centres to be built right across the territory, but NT Labor says this industry needs proper scrutiny and is today calling for an independent inquiry. So we'll learn all about this next after this request from Matt. Here it is, Here You Come Again by Dolly Parton.
And here I go.
That is a request from Matt in Palmerston this afternoon. I reckon we'll have time for one more Dolly tune in our second half. So if there's a Dolly Parton song that you would love to hear this afternoon, please do send it through on the text line 0487 991057. Paul says, Matt, Dolly Parton lives in my garden. I've got a beautiful rose. I've named it after Dolly Parton, and it's growing super well, says Paul this afternoon on the text.
Hi, I'm Verity. I'm a licensed aircraft engineer here in the Territory, and you're listening to the Country Hour.
As you know, Country Hour fans, there's a number of data centre companies that are looking to build large projects right here in the Territory. And the NT government is super keen to help make this happen. But the Labor opposition says all of this needs proper scrutiny. And Shadow Minister for Lands and Planning, Ed Smelt, is today calling for an independent inquiry. He spoke just a moment ago to Jack Hislop.
Data centres can bring a range of benefits and opportunities with jobs, new industries, innovation and entrepreneurship. But we also need to know what the costs are. What are the impacts on our environment, on our land, on our communities? And that's why we're calling for an independent inquiry to fully understand the costs and benefits of potential data centre industry in the Northern Territory.
So how long would this inquiry run for, and who's the type of independent person who would lead it?
We're looking to establish this so that it can be reported back within the new year. We know this industry is moving quickly. We need to do an inquiry that's fast. We would call for this independent inquiry so that we can have experts and people from around the country, but also our own homegrown knowledge provide input into the recommendations for the future development of this industry.
So you'd be looking at some type of data centre expert to run it?
Yes, we'd want to have experts from the industry. We want to have people who know and understand the Northern Territory context, and that's why we're calling for that independent inquiry so that we have all the knowledge when we're making decisions about investment in the Northern Territory.
Should there be a moratorium on data centres until that inquiry finishes? You know, if it does eventuate, if the government agrees to establish an inquiry, should there be a moratorium until that inquiry is finished?
We believe that this inquiry is the best approach forward. This is a rapid and fast developing industry. We believe that a moratorium would put the brakes on the entire industry when what we need is a balance. We need transparency, we need scrutiny, we need community consultation, and we believe the best way to do that is through an independent inquiry happening now.
But in the meantime, data centres could still set up?
So as we've seen, we've already got a data centre right here in the CBD of Darwin. The industry is already here. What we need now is to get that information and understanding about what the future might look like so that we can make good decisions about future data centre investment in the Northern Territory.
If this inquiry is so important, though, why not just have a moratorium just so everything is set in stone, is right before more data centres pop up?
We believe that this is the best middle ground. This is the best approach to take, that we keep confidence, we keep investment in the Northern Territory and in jobs for the future, but also getting that clarity, getting the scrutiny, getting the input from the community. We feel that this is the best balance and the best approach for the Northern Territory.
The government wants to establish a big data centre industry here, and they want to basically do it as quickly as possible. We know other states are also keen on data centres. By calling for this inquiry, could Labor be seen as being anti-business in a way?
No, not at all. This inquiry is actually pro-business. It provides certainty, it provides transparency, it provides understanding for the entire community. This will help inform regulations that all industry will need to follow and be informed by. So we're actually providing certainty to industry. You do not get certainty with a lack of information we see under the current CLP government. You don't get certainty through moratoriums.
That is Labor's Ed Smelt. He's the Shadow Minister for Lands and Planning, today calling for an independent inquiry into the potential rollout of data centres in the Northern Territory. The NT's Chief Minister, Leah Finocchiaro, hasn't commented on this just yet because she's in National Cabinet today, and one of the topics being discussed in that Cabinet is definitely data centres. The federal government wants a national set of rules when it comes to things like how data centres will be powered, where water will come from, etc. The Territory government, as you know, it wants to use Beetaloo gas. The federal government wants it to be renewables. Territory government wants gas. And Leah Finocchiaro says the Territory should be left to choose its own path.
I think states and territories are elected by their community to represent the views of their community and make the laws that suit those people. And ultimately, we don't need the federal government coming in heavy-handed and trying to dictate to states and territories how they should be developing data centres or not and what energy mix they should be using. In the territory, we have an incredibly unique situation where in less than 7 days' time, the Beetaloo Basin will be powering territory homes and businesses. And there is enough gas in that reservation to power our entire nation for 200 years, plus support our allies and the region. And so we're in a very unique and special situation, which we want recognised by the federal government, because if data centres are to want to develop in the territory, they should be utilising that enormous energy resource we have.
So have you spoken to the Prime Minister or any federal counterparts in the lead up to this meeting about that, and what have they said to you?
Today is the first real chance to ventilate these issues. My colleagues have been at different ministerial levels. I know the treasurers and the energy ministers have been discussing these, but we're very clear in our position as a Northern Territory. We do not want to be dictated to by Canberra. I can tell you, Tom, there's nothing Territorians hate more than a heavy-handed federal government, and I'll be here to stand our ground and make sure that Territorians are put first at National Cabinet today.
You mentioned the unique situation of the Northern Territory. Last year when your government greenlit Beetaloo Energy to frack the Beetaloo Basin, the NT Deputy Chief Minister said that it would be a lifeline for the Territory and a way to, quote, keep the lights on. These data centres are very power hungry. So, I mean, thinking more broadly, in terms of data centres bringing on additional power, do you think that the NT can sustain very many data centres without compromising supply for households?
There is no question that the Territory can handle data centres and rapid investment as a result of the Beetaloo Basin. It will actually support and underpin economic growth that we are fighting desperately for opportunities for our people. That's the difference in the situation we're in. I don't think the everyday Australian quite understands what the Territory is about to unleash here. This is enough affordable, reliable energy for every Australian, plus our allies and the region. And so I completely appreciate, and particularly with the East Coast energy crisis, that there are concerns about data centres in southern states. But the Northern Territory has the answers to all of those problems. We can properly fuel, we can properly provide the energy in abundance to every Australian, to every data centre, to every ally that needs it. That's the scale of the resource we're sitting on, which is why we need a different approach for the Territory.
That's the Territory's Chief Minister Leah Fenocchiaro speaking to ABC Radio National earlier today.
G'day, my name is Amanda Murphy and I'm the President of the Northern Territory ICPA, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
We're just 4 minutes away from the 1 o'clock news here on the ABC. Just quickly, the NT government has appointed Dr. Sue Fitzpatrick to be the full-time chief vet of the Northern Territory. So in ways, Sue Fitzpatrick is back. I'm in the studio with Tom Robinson. What are the details here?
Thanks, Matt. Yeah, so Dr. Fitzpatrick had been in the role in an acting capacity, but the Department of Agriculture and Fisheries says she's back full time again. So she previously served in the role from 2019 to 23. The government says this is a critical leadership role for the Territory's livestock industries, with responsibility overseeing animal health and welfare and representing the Territory within Australia's national biosecurity system.
And of course, stepping in at a very interesting time.
Big time, yeah. And the big story for her will be the ongoing management of H5 bird flu, which hasn't arrived in the Territory yet, but it sort of seems like that will inevitably happen. She will also oversee the development of the new Livestock Investigations and Compliance Unit. Dr. Fitzpatrick says she's excited to return to the role, and the Chief Executive of the Department of Agriculture and Fisheries, Amelia Vella, says that Dr. Sue Fitzpatrick is an outstanding leader with a proven track record in protecting and advancing the Territory's livestock industries.
Okay. Got a few texts coming here. about a range of things. Graham says, Matt, my company has been operating out of a data centre in Darwin for over 20 years. I wonder where in the world the jobs will be, because none of the well-paid jobs need to be anywhere near the actual data centre. I question the jobs benefit that the Northern Territory is going to see from all of this, says Graham. Someone else has been listening to the Chief Minister and wants to know, what is an everyday Australian? Hey, if you were listening closely to the Chief Minister a moment ago, I think she gave us a little heads up as to what the big news story will be next week. Here's just a quick replay.
In the Territory, we have an incredibly unique situation where in less than 7 days' time, the Beetaloo Basin will be powering Territory homes and businesses. And there is enough gas in that reservation to power our entire nation for 200 years, plus support our allies and the region.
So did you hear that? Less than 7 days, Beetaloo gas coming to the top end to power homes around Darwin and Katherine, it would seem. So there's a little hint as to what will be in the headlines in the next 7 days.
Hi, I'm Kes Phillips. I work with a bunch of extraordinary children in a school community growing almost anything you can imagine, and we have loads of fun. You're listening to The Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. In a moment, we'll take a look at an economic impact report into buffer grass in the Northern Territory. This report was commissioned by the government. What are the cost benefits of buffer grass in the NT? You'll find out in a moment. And yes, if you'd love to hear a Dolly Parton song this afternoon, please do send through your request on 0487 991057. Bart wants to hear The Bargain Store. A few people hoping to hear Jolene. And a text here from someone wanting to hear After the Gold Rush by Dolly Parton, Linda Ronstadt and Emmylou Harris. I can't say I'm aware of that tune, but I'm liking the looks of it. Ooh, I've got a little something to share with you here. So my colleagues have sent me this audio. It's from 1998. When Dolly was busy promoting her album Hungry Again. She was on a talk show called Prime Time Country and was asked a question by a bloke in the audience.
Sir, what's your name?
Jim Canto.
And you're from?
Right here in Nashville.
All right, Jim. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Good. Dolly, I'd like to ask you a question.
Okay.
I know that you have a lot of experience wearing wigs.
Yeah.
And I wonder, should I use Rogaine? Should I get a wig? Or should I stay the way I am? What do you think, Dolly?
I think you should stay the way you are, because just because you've lost your fuzz don't mean you're not a peach.
Just because you've lost your fuzz doesn't mean you're not a peach. Oh, rest in peace, Dolly Parton. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Ruby Cuthbertson's there this afternoon. How are you, Ruby?
I'm well, thank you, Matt.
Is it clear skies in Central Australia today?
It is, yep. All that cloud has cleared off through central parts, and it was a bit cooler overnight as a result. In Alice Springs, I think it got to around 5 degrees, which is the coolest night they've seen in a couple of weeks.
Mm.
And we've got a southeasterly surge pushing into central Australia today, so it's a bit windier than previous as well.
How windy is it out on the Barkly today?
We've seen winds, mean winds around 35 kilometres per hour in the morning, gusting up to around 50, and then they've eased off a little bit in the afternoon, and that southeasterly surge has pushed a little bit more into the top end, so we've seen breezy mornings around Darwin and central parts of the Arnhem District as well.
Okay, so now that moisture's left Central Australia for now, what are the next few days looking like for that region?
Yeah, so we're going to see pretty much clear skies and a high pressure pattern dominating for at least the next 7 days or so. We do have a very weak trough that's going to skim to the south of the territory on Friday, so that might bring a little bit of cloud to the far southwest of the Lassiter district, so kind of to the south of Yallara, but we're not really expecting any of that cloud to push into the territory. We'll see those windy conditions continuing throughout the mornings, a little bit of dry air pushing up to the base of the top end, so around Katherine, and it'll feel a little bit drier around northern parts of the top end as well over the next couple of days. Potentially a little bit of fog around. We saw this morning in the Arnhem District that fog returning, but apart from that, for the next week or so, we're going to see, yeah, back to that typical kind of dry season pattern.
And Ruby, there is a fire ban in place today for the Darwin and Adelaide River fire weather forecast areas. What can you tell us about conditions?
Yeah, so winds out near that, the fire ban area, so the Darwin and Adelaide River region, we've got a high fire danger, but it is a fire ban due to pockets of extreme to catastrophic in those gamma grass areas. So we're seeing winds today will be the peak, today and tomorrow, so kind of 30 kilometres per hour, gusting up to around 40, 50. Tomorrow will be similar, windy in the mornings, easing off in the afternoon, and then by Friday we start to see those winds ease off again a little bit, which will also drop those fire dangers down again.
Rightio. So you'd expect by the weekend these fire bans won't be in place?
Not sure, because we do still have those pockets of extreme and catastrophic, but certainly the fire danger ratings, the FBI, is dropping off by around Friday because those winds are dropping off. It just depends on how much dry air is around. So we'll see a little bit closer, but today that fire ban is in place and we're expecting those high fire dangers to continue, just not quite as high on the weekend.
Anything else that you think we should be aware of?
I think that's about it, Matt.
All right. Have a lovely afternoon, Ruby.
Thanks, you too.
Ruby Cuthbertson at the Weather Bureau, just repeating, fire ban in place today for the Darwin and Adelaide River fire weather forecast areas. So this includes Darwin Bachelor and the Adelaide River Emergency Response Area, the Litchfield Municipality and the Kamali Shire. So no person in these areas shall light a fire or cause a fire to be lit in the open during this period, and the fire ban is valid until midnight.
You'll find barrow loads of gardening goodness in the September issue of Gardening Australia. Explore the best plants for long-lasting blooms, visit a native garden and tour a tropical backyard. There's expert help for your roses and indoor plants, advice on replenishing your soil, plus tips on growing passion fruit, water chestnut and spring veg. Gardening Australia, from newsagents and abcmagazines.com.au.
The text number here at the Country Hour is 0487 991057. On the topic of data centres, got a text here that says, Matt, what a contradiction to construct hyperscale data centres before a thorough inquiry report. Thank you very much to Ed Smelt, the Shadow Minister, for driving this urgent reality check, says someone here this afternoon on 0487 991057. It's 14 past one and you are tuned into the Country Hour. An economic impact report into buffer grass in the Northern Territory. It has been released this week. Some of the numbers might surprise you. We'll take a good look at this next.
G'day, Rob Hall here from Airway Logistics at the Darwin Export Hub. We support industry here to export rock melons, watermelons, pumpkins and mango to the world straight out of Darwin. And you're listening to The Country Hour.
The Northern Territory CLP government says it wants the federal government to take stronger action on bufflegrass. And this is off the back of an economic impact report commissioned by the NT government, which says the further spread of buffle will cause economic damage in the Northern Territory. Now, this report focused on a hypothetical scenario where an extra 1,000 hectares of buffle was added to Central Australia. Researchers compared economic benefits to the cattle industry with the cost of managing this extra growth of buffle. And it found that the impact on land care, fire management and other activities would cost more than $6,000 per hectare per year. And the benefit to the cattle industry was just $112 per hectare. Now, one of the authors of this report is Kamal Jitsenga from Charles Darwin University, who spoke to Tom Robinson about the findings.
So there is a huge cost to the society. So if it keeps on expanding, there is a cost for fire management, there is a huge cost for biodiversity loss, and there is a huge cost for loss of tourism opportunities and, of course, cultural assets that are threatened due to buffer spread and increased fire regimes. So when we compare the benefits and the costs, we are losing roughly about more than $6,000 per hectare per year.
How do you quantify that dollar per hectare amount?
Well, firstly, the losses are happening. So some of those losses are not that they will happen into the future, because the spread has been so much all across Central Australia. So the losses are already happening, and the fire managing fire has been very expensive and costly with increased spread of buffer grass. So when we try to actually interpret these costs, we used very conservative numbers to look at what it is if we want to look for biodiversity loss, what it is if we have to repair the landscape, to restore native diversity.
It's based on the cost it's based on the land management cost and the cost to regenerate landscapes. That's how you've arrived at that figure?
Exactly. How can we manage the landscape in a better way to keep the species going? So we didn't look at the total cost. So we looked at replacement costs rather than actually looking at the total cost, which would have been otherwise quite high.
Okay, so does that mean that figure of $6,000 per hectare per year, you said before that would be conservative, so that the actual true cost could be higher?
Yes, exactly.
Part of your process was also to consult with the various interested groups, such as traditional owner groups and the pastoral industry. What did cattle producers tell you about how they use buffer grass?
One of the benefits that people talk about buffer grass is, yes, it has enhanced pasture productivity. There's no doubt about that. It has made pastoral business more resilient. The other major benefit, they said, okay, so they couldn't go through like the boom and burst kind of cycle, which buffer has given them a bit more economic stability. But some of the drawbacks that a few of the people that we have interviewed, they have highlighted, is when they had drought, then buffer completely died out. And when they had good rainfall, it just came back like anything. So it was hard to control at that stage, because it then later on triggered fires. So fire management cost, they said, is an increasing risk that they have to factor in now in their business. So that's a major concern from them. The report is about how we as a society can manage something like buffalo so that there are benefits to everybody. And it's managed on landscapes where it's not needed, because otherwise it's a cost to the society, which pastoralists are also part of. So how we as a society can manage something like buffer grass, which spreads so quickly and has spread all across, Central Australia. So one of the biggest concern in this case is, because the benefits that go from growing buffer grass is mainly to the pastoral sector, while the costs are borne by the public sector, by the government agencies, by the tourist sector, by Indigenous peoples. So how do we consolidate the two? I think that's a big challenge, and that's why I'm saying that we need a societal approach to manage something like buffer grass where it's not needed.
Do you think buffer grass should be declared a weed of national significance by the federal government?
I'm more a research person. Whether I should be answering that question, I'm not sure. But we as a society, this is what I can say, should be looking for you know, what are the net costs and the benefits we are paying for something that goes as wild and is not manageable and causing cost to the society as a whole. Because at the end, the public, it's the taxpayers' money that goes into managing these weeds or any pests that happen for one reason or the other. So we should be thinking long term. And once these things, you know, spread out, they're very hard to contain. So having some good management plans in place now is much better approach than thinking 10, 20 years later.
That is ecological economist Kamaljit Sanger speaking to Tom Robinson about this economic impact report into bufflegrass in the Northern Territory. The NT's Minister for Lands, Planning and Environment, Joshua Burgoyne, was not available for an interview today, but in a statement to the Country Hour says he has written to the federal government to seek its support on managing bufflegrass and has called on local councils and the Commonwealth to work with the NT government. He says the Territory government is providing $750,000 every year to manage bufflegrass. The Country Hour will keep seeking an interview with the Minister. We're also looking to speak to the NT Cattlemen's Association about this report. And we understand another economic impact report is currently being worked on by the CSIRO. Will it reach the same conclusion? We'll have to wait and see. As you may be aware, the Commonwealth is currently in the process of deciding whether or not bufflegrass should be classified as a weed of national significance. Jolene, a lot happening in this space.
Jolene, Jolene, please don't take him just because you can. Your beauty is beyond compare, with flaming locks of auburn hair, with ivory skin and eyes of emerald green. Your smile is like a
making
spray.
International headlines today, country music legend Dolly Parton has died at the age of 80. A beloved icon, Dolly was one of the most recognisable stars of the country music world for decades. David Claughton, with the help from the ABC in Tamworth, reports on her death and the impact that she had in regional Australia.
My coat of many colours that my mama made for me, made only from red.
Dolly's nephew, Brian Seaver, made the announcement on social media and spoke about her roots.
Dolly was a farmer, just like her daddy. He farmed the soil, she farmed songs and happiness.
The day after her high school graduation, she left home to go to Nashville and became a big country music star. She was also hugely successful in the pop charts, on TV and in films, but she never forgot where she came from.
I love country music. I feel that I myself have hopefully enough talent to branch out and do other things, but there's nothing that means as much to me really as the country feeling, and it's important to me that my people always stay proud of me.
Dolly visited Australia in 1979, again in 1984 with Kenny Rogers, then in 2011, and her last trip was 2014. Cheryl Brown, managing editor of Country Music Capital News, told Christy Reading about her admiration for Dolly, who played in Australia's country music capital, Tamworth.
While she was savvy, a businesswoman and all of that, she was real. What she gave us was real, and we all felt that she was approachable. She shared everything about herself. She shared her music. She loved doing collaborations. She sang with people like Julio Iglesias, Queen Latifah, Willie Nelson, Norah Jones, Kris Kristofferson, Porter Wagoner. You know, the biggest one of them all for me was Kenny Rogers. So I just think she was incredible.
Farmer and Mayor of Narrabri, Daryl Tiemann, saw that show in 2014 and says a lot of people in Tamworth are remembering her today.
She's an absolute virtuoso, not just from a singing point of view and a composer, of course, but she played the saxophone, she played the violin, she played the guitar, she played the fiddle, she played all of these instruments. I do remember one point that had us all in stitches, and she paraded across over the stage and she said, I just want to thank you all for spending so much money to see me perform. And she turned and looked at the audience and she said, but it costs a lot of money to look this cheap. And like all of us were All of us were in hysterics. It was very funny.
Yeah, such but, an incredible sense of humour she had, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, in Narrabri Shire, we've also got the Imagination Library, well supported by businesses and charities and other people around, but it's had a massive impact in Tamworth. It's had a massive impact in our Narrabri Shire. And even the school teachers all remark on how the kids are now opening books properly and now starting to learn to love reading. And Dolly, that's a true legacy that Dolly's left us all.
Dolly partnered with United Way Australia to bring the book program to Australia in 2013, making it the fourth nation and the third continent to launch the Imagination Library.
My dad didn't get a chance to go to school, so he was so very proud of me when I started the program. He was prouder of the fact that the little kids called me the book lady than the fact that I'd worked so hard to become a star.
Dolly also donated $2 million to help people in the US affected by Hurricane Helene in Florida, the Tennessee floods and the Sevier County wildfires. And she helped a lot of musicians. When she toured Australia in 2011, she was supported by Australian country music duo Busby Maru. Tom Busby told Karen Wilson about his reaction to her death.
Like pretty much gobsmacked. And obviously we got to support her, Busby Maru. It was the most amazing experience. A couple of young boys from Rocky flying down to the Hunter Valley and playing two sold-out shows to, I think, 15 or 20,000 per night. And then getting to meet her, it was just phenomenal.
Gosh, what was it like meeting her?
Oh, it was unreal. I mean, I still remember the conversation. She told us that she wound the window down of her tour bus and listened to us, and we sounded lovely. And then as we walked away, she said, well, what's your old names again? We said, Busby Maru. She goes, well, good luck in your careers, Busby Maru.
Dolly's nephew, Brian Seaver, says she did that everywhere she went. Brian Seaver talked about Dolly's last wishes.
Dolly called me and said she wants to rest in a beautiful bed of plush cotton because after a life wearing heavy rhinestones, she finally deserves to be comfortable. Rest in peace, Aunt Dolly, and may God bless you all. She will always love you.
If I should stay, I would only be in your way. No, I'll think of you each step of the way. And
big thanks to David Claughton and the team at the ABC in Tamworth for that report. Just finally to some text messages from you this afternoon regarding Bufflegrass. Paul in New South Wales says much more needs to be done on Bufflegrass. Another text that says, got to say, $750,000 is just a token effort from the NT government. We need more, much more. And Alex in Alice Springs says, Matt, I'm taken back to 1982-83 when I worked at the horticultural block at Asri. The senior technical officer, Frank McAllister, frequently went crook about the cost of managing Bufflegrass as a persistent weed versus its benefits for the cattle industry. He pointed out the productivity of horticulture per unit area of land was vastly superior to the cattle industry. It was ironic, given that the Asri horticultural block was previously the site of a pasture species evaluation trial in the early 1960s, which found Bufflegrass was highly adaptable for local conditions, says Alex this afternoon. That's it for today's Country Hour. Rest in peace to Dolly Parton, and keep it rural.
Treat you kind, and I hope that you have all that you ever dreamed of. And I wish you joy and happiness. Thank you.